Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Edward Snowden's open letter published in the German magazine Der Spiegel, A Manifesto for the Truth, and get an analysis from a 27-year CIA veteran, Elizabeth Murray, who served as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for the Near East on the National Intelligence Council. We will discuss the Snowden letter written in Moscow on Friday, which accuses governments of trying to squash debate about mass surveillance with a never-before-seen witch hunt. Then we will revisit the deadly intersection of mental illness and easy access to assault weapons, which is the apparent reason behind the shooting at Los Angeles International Airport. John Donahue, a professor of law at Stanford Law School and author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis, joins us to discuss the irony that the victim was a TSA screener who Americans accept as someone preventing a terrorist attack, however remote, but daily acts of gun violence that kill 2,000 times more Americans than terrorists are apparently acceptable as the NRA ensures no laws can be enacted to stop mentally ill people from purchasing military-style weapons. Then finally, we will speak with Jim Wild, president of the Food Research and Action Center, about the cruel and unusual cuts in food stamps assistance to over 47 million needy Americans, with three-quarters of the participants in households with children. We will discuss the political momentum against helping the least among us in the name of reducing the deficit, even though the deficit is receding at a record rate, and while food stamps are considered one of the most efficient ways to stimulate the economy, as every dollar in food stamps generates $1.70 in economic activity. And joining us now is Elizabeth Murray, who served as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for the Near East on the National Intelligence Council before retiring after a 27-year career in the U.S. government, where she specialized in Middle Eastern political and media analysis. She is a member of Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity in Intelligence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Murray.
Hi, pleasure to be with you, Ian.
And Elizabeth, yesterday I spoke with Ray McGovern, who, as you know, went recently to Moscow and met with Edward Snowden along with other with a delegation of other veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity. And they presented Edward Snowden with the Sam Adams Award. And since you were with the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity Intelligence, I guess just for the benefit of the public, my recollection is that Sam Adams was the CIA analyst who alone stood up to the entire U.S. military during the Vietnam War and kept saying we were losing the war, and to the political authorities, while the Pentagon and General Westmoreland and were having the 5 o'clock follies every day, talking about body counts and light at the end of the tunnel. Is that the do I have that right?
Well, that's right, except that actually I think Sam was, like many people in government, he knew the truth, but I think he was afraid for his career. He was afraid to speak out and didn't actually begin speaking out until after he'd left the government, after the fact. And he actually really regretted that he hadn't spoken out sooner. He felt that he could have avoided maybe entirely one half of the Vietnam War Memorial names maybe wouldn't be on there. And he went to an early death with this regret. So I think that we want to honor Sam Adams' spirit and hope and reward, at least hope that others will be motivated to speak out while there is still time and before, you know, the consequences manifest themselves.
So did he speak out while he was in government or only, I mean, within the confines of government interagency discussions?
I think he tried at a very sort of basic level and was told that no, that was not on, that was not acceptable. And, you know, there were certain agendas that were going forward that prevented him from really speaking out more than he was able to. So I believe he did testify during the Pentagon Papers time, but by then it was too late.
So how does this apply to Edward Snowden? Because I had conflicting interviews on it yesterday with Ray McGovern basically saying that, you know, that Putin was in fact protecting Snowden and, you know, that from SEAL Team 6 or from drone attacks. And on the other hand, I had Lon Snowden's lawyer, Bruce Fine, who's also represented a lot of the people that were at the met with Snowden, Jeslin Radek, for example, in Moscow, and he was actually quite critical of WikiLeaks for gatecrashing. He felt they were gatecrashing and using the Snowden affair for publicity and fundraising, and also of Glenn Greenwald, who he thought was making movie deals and film deals, etc. So I'm trying to – and the main critique that he had was that the focus has been lost from Snowden's original speaking out about the domestic intelligence abuses, and but the focus entirely shifted to foreign intelligence. So is that where we are, and what is this manifesto that came out today in Der Spiegel going to do for us?
Well, I think the manifesto is pretty straightforward. I think Ed Snowden basically is saying, I have the right to privacy. I cannot guarantee that my government will uphold this privacy or any of my other rights to privacy that are being violated through this mass surveillance. Therefore, I need to take action. So, I mean, I think that there's this debate about is Ed Snowden a hero or a traitor. I think it's a gray area. Life isn't that simple. I think, obviously, he did overstep some legal bounds to do what he did, but I think that we all owe him thanks, because what he did was a much greater good. I mean, he's basically, in my view anyway, he is trying to improve the way this country protects its citizens' freedoms by calling attention to the abuses and invasive monitoring of the communications of American citizens, which, by the way, has been going on without public knowledge, without public debate, and evidently without any accountability by our policymakers. So I think Ed Snowden saw the need to shine light on this secret program that was targeting innocent Americans. And now, yes, it's up to us, the American people, to hold our policymakers accountable for this.
So do you think that given the shift in focus, at least in the press, where there's this constant drip of new revelations about NSA spying on the Brazilians and on the French and on the Germans, on Angela Merkel, you know, what sandwiches she orders and this kind of stuff, and that what is happening, as far as I know, in terms of efforts to reform, particularly the NSA's behavior here in the United States, are they getting lost a little with all this focus on foreign intelligence? I mean, you've got people like Dianne Feinstein constantly talking about the need to stop spying on foreign officials, but I don't hear a lot of talk about, because as you know, there was a very close vote in the House a while back to basically strike down the rubric under which the FISA court uses the Patriot Act to gather all this metadata that Edward Snowden exposed.
Right. I don't know whether it's actually distracting, because I think the whole thing needs to be taken sort of holistically. You know, some people might think it's okay to bug Angela Merkel's handy, and, you know, maybe there might have been a small window for that, you know, right after 9/11 when people were concerned about, you know, well, who's on our side and what's going on. But, you know, a lot of this bugging is of, you know, United Nations, of actually, you know, economic targets. I understand Brazil's Ministry of Mine and Energy was bugged. I mean, a lot of this we need to, you know, take on board here in the United States and think to ourselves, okay, if this is what's happening abroad, you know, if it's not already happening here, what is the potential for it to happen here? So I think we need to take lessons from this information and apply it to, you know, what kind of abuses are going on here with our own privacy. So I don't really think it's something, it's something that's unnecessary or too much information. I think it's something that it's still an important window into what the NSA is doing and what the NSA is doing beyond its mandate.
And again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Murray, who served as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for the Near East on the National Intelligence Council before retiring after a 27-year career in the U.S. government, where she specialized in Middle Eastern political and media analysis. She is a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity in Intelligence. So is it a result? In fact, frankly, when the story first broke, one of the more important aspects of or perhaps tangential aspects of the story was that Edward Snowden was working for this defense contractor, Booz Allen Hamilton, who are in turn owned by the Carlyle Group, and that they get 98% of their income from the federal government. And they these contractors basically hoover up about 70% of the intelligence budget. And my understanding from talking to former CIA officers is that there's a great deal of resentment within the public service that they're being poached. The intelligence professionals are being poached for their security clearances into these contractors' operations where they, as in Snowden's case, their pay is tripled or quadrupled. But then the government, then the contractor charges the government, you know, they mark it up about tenfold. And the long and the short of it is that is this resulting in a focus on economic intelligence, which I understand is what's the subtext in the anger that the French and the Germans have, is that these private contractors like Booz Allen Hamilton are not necessarily interested in traditional national security, but more interested in economic intelligence because that's what they are, private corporations.
You know, I really hesitate to tread into that area, which I don't know enough about. I would prefer not to speculate.
Mm-hmm. But it's a fact, is it not, that within the intelligence world, there is a lot of, in effect, people are trading in public service for private gain, and this is this having a deleterious effect on the what's left of the traditional intelligence, which is the you know those that are in government service as opposed to those making a living off government service.
Well, to my knowledge, I mean, even if someone is a contractor, they're still under the purview of a government supervisor. So presumably, you know, the government would still be the one that is driving the intelligence. You know, I will say that during my time in government, there was a bit of resentment against the so-called, you know, green badgers, vis-a-vis the blue badges, which were the government people, because, of course, yes, they often did make more money than us, and many government people did sort of go over to the other side, if you will. But at the same time, you know, there were sort of less benefits, and I'm not sure the retirement was the same and that sort of thing. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether it's more profitable to be a contractor, especially if you don't know from year to year whether your contract will be renewed. But in terms of Booz Allen or another contractor driving the intelligence agenda, that I wouldn't be familiar with.
Well, one of the people that went to Moscow, I invited him out here recently to the UCLA Hammer Forum that I do in Los Angeles, and he, Thomas Drake, and he was a genuine whistleblower, as much as he didn't take any documents with him when he left the NSA. And they, in fact, they tried to nail him by reclassifying a document that he had at home to as an excuse to put him behind bars because he was blowing a whistle on a massively expensive boondoggle called Trailblazer. But he had told me that during that period when he was when he left, the 2001 to 2005 period in the first Bush administration, there was absolutely no restraints on the NSA. And have we retroactively, I mean, I know Snowden has opened the door a little bit, But are you satisfied that we are even anywhere near knowing the full scope of what the government's been up to in terms of its surveillance on American citizens? Because apparently through that early period, 2001, 2005, they weren't even going via the FISA court.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Obviously, this has been going on for some time. I guess that remains to be seen. You know, with it, as you say, this drip, I don't think there's going to be any let up in terms of the revelations that come out. But perhaps someday we will find out. You know, it's my hope that as a result of what Ed Snowden has initiated, you know, that our government will undertake some reforms. And, you know, maybe the American public will, you know, learn what it deserves to learn about violations of individual people's freedoms. I mean, these, you know, we're talking about, you know, innocent people whose communications, whose emails are being, you know, monitored or have been monitored for a prolonged period of time. So I would hope that these things come to light. And, you know, I might add that, you know, if the U.S. government is interested in preempting future Mannings and Snowdens and future whistleblowers, then I think it's the obligation of this government to be very straightforward and upfront with the American public, even when it comes to sort of embarrassing transgressions. I think it's far better for the government to come clean than to have these individuals come out. But again, I mean, I think if people see that there's no other recourse. Nobody wants to go through what Tom Drake went through or what Bradley Manning went through.
Well, should there be then one of the reforms, should it not be some kind of internal forum that's stronger than the Inspector General regime, which doesn't seem to be particularly effective? In other words, had Sam Adams had a forum where he could, expound on his concerns about U.S. foreign policy based upon bad data, as the Vietnam War was, and in the case of Snowden, he wouldn't have to go off to both to China and Russia, which are hardly friendly to the United States and hardly are paragons of civil liberties. So, is there a way to construct something, a place to go that's stronger than the Inspector General regime with people inside who have serious concerns about what the government's up to?
Well, I would have thought people could either, you know, failing the Inspector Generals, which unfortunately is often the fox guarding the hen house, because in the CIA, for example, the Inspector General, you know, comes under the purview of the Director of Central Intelligence. And so, you know, we already know what happened there. When one Inspector General, tried to release important information about CIA transgressions in Guantanamo and in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere, the then director of CIA, Michael Hayden, had the Inspector General's office itself put under investigation. So, you know, but what about the Senate, Oversight Committee? I mean, surely we would have been able to go, if we could go to our Congress people who are supposed to be supervising these intelligence agencies and their activities, that might have been another way to do it. But, you know, sometimes it seems like, you know, some of those people on the committee have a rather incestuous relationship in the intelligence community, and it seems that they protect each other. I mean, we haven't had much progress there. So, the only thing that we could do maybe is to revive what we had back in the 1970s with the Church Committee and just have an investigation and bring these things to light.
Well, that was certainly anything that approaching the Church Committee would be a breath of fresh air. That was truly radical, was it not? In terms of what it was.
Yes, it was.
And it brought about these very intelligence oversight committees in the House and Senate that apparently not doing their job. So I guess we do need a reboot, right?
Looks like we need some major changes and major reforms. And, you know, hopefully this is a wake-up call to our government to enact these reforms and changes. before it's too late and before this does become a totalitarian state. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with that movie that came out a number of years ago called The Lives of Others.
Oh, yes. About, it's great movie about the Stasi,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful movie.
I would recommend... Yeah.
I was going to say, Elizabeth, unfortunately we've run out of time, but I appreciate that reference to that film, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Murray, who served as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for the Near East on the National Intelligence Council before retiring after a 27-year career in the U.S. government, where she specialized in Middle Eastern political and media analysis. She's a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity in Intelligence. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about the deadly intersection of mental illness and easy access to assault weapons.
Looking for a sign. I'm looking for the treason that I knew in '65.